James Klatt 2. Today we're going to do a comparison. Now so far in this, in recent history, I've done a comparison on diff tools, on a variety of diff tools. I've done a comparison of WXPython and PyQ. And now apparently I'm doing a comparison of backup tools. Is this a trend? I don't know. It's not an intentional trend. But it is kind of an interesting exercise because you get to learn a lot about different tools when you research them enough to actually try to speak intelligently about them. And to that end, I am going to warn you, I'm going to caution you here that I didn't spend equal time with all the tools that I'll be talking about today. Rsync had a really good lead on everything because it was the first one I learned about, really. It's an oldie. Very old, and also just kind of old. I mean, it's like an old tool, but it's also one of those tools that people learn about pretty quickly, I feel. And so they start using it pretty early on, and that's what I did. Once I was ready to graduate from rsync, I discovered rdiff backup, and that's what I've been using for probably the past 4 or 5 years, and I'm continuing to use to this day. And then there's rsnapshot, which I think I probably looked at back when I was looking to graduate from rsync, because I was looking at practically everything at that point. And I probably looked at it a couple of times here and there, but I never really settled into rsnapshot. And so I've really, probably the most time I've spent with it was just over the past week. And that's just not, I mean, that doesn't compare, you know, to 5 years of rsync, 5 years of rdiff backup, and a week of rsnapshot. So it's not exactly a fair comparison by any means, but hopefully it'll be a comparison. Hopefully I've hit the main points of all the tools that I'll be talking about. So let's start out with rsync. And rsync, of course, is a famous BSD tool that just its main appeal is that it copies stuff to a directory exactly as it was in the previous directory, and that before copying, it checks the destination to see if there's already a version of it there. And if there is a version of it there, it doesn't copy the file. And that's a great space saver. So what I've got here, I'll just do, let's see, just got some sample data that I've been working with. So, for instance, if I do an rsync-a for archive, I think. Yep, archive. And so I'll just actually do dash dash archive, and then dash dash verbose, because that's the other one that I always use. And then I'll take whatever's in my source directory here, which right now, let's just say four files, and then I give it a destination folder, which I'll just do dir-rsync. Then it scans my destination directory. It sees if anything is there. It sees that nothing is there. And then it copies all four files over to my destination. And so if I look in my destination folder, sure enough, there's an exact copy of everything that I rsynced over. And that's a backup, technically, right? I mean, that's a backup. Great. So now if I do an rsync, well, I'll just do an ls, for instance, slash user bin. There should be a lot of stuff in there. Yeah, there is. And then I'll redirect the output of that to something in my source directory, which I'll call bin.list. Okay, so now there's a new file, in my source directory. So if I do an rsync-archive-verbose from source to dir-rsync, once again, it scans everything, it figures out what's there and what's not there yet, and it copies only what is needed for my new file to get over into my destination folder. And now if I do an ls on my destination folder, I see that once again, yes, I have one new file. Now, here's the interesting thing, the funny thing about rsync that I think forever confuses people, And to be fair, it's something that confuses people with copy and move as well. So it's not just an rsync thing, but it's something. So let's say that we do an rsync dash dash archive dash dash verbose, and then I do source tab space. Okay, so it's source, and then I do dir dash rsync tab, and I don't know why this is the way that it does it, but it does it. It when I do tab, it finishes it off with a slash, the ending slash. And I don't know, I really don't honestly know why it doesn't do that for me. Yeah. Oh, it's because, you know why? Because I have other source directories in this. I have source dash original, source dash comparison, stuff like that. So, because I'm in this test directory. So, yeah. So depending on whether you put a slash after a directory is going to actually affect how rsync runs. So for instance, if I do an rsync dash dash archive dash dash verbose source no slash dir dash rsync no slash, then if I do a list of my dir rsync, I've got rsync, like dir rsync, with all my original files in it, plus one other thing. You think, well, yeah, you just added a file. No, that's not it. The one other thing I have is another copy of my source directory. So I've sort of rsynced my source directory into my backup folder. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to copy the files over. So I'm gonna delete that with trashy. And then I'm going to try this again with a different combination of magical incantations. So now I'm going to do rsync-av, because that's the short version of archive verbose, source with a slash, with a trailing slash, and then dir rsync with no trailing slash. And now if I look into dir rsync, now I've got what I actually intended. And yes, I see in the output of rsync that it only copied one new file over. And when you're only dealing with five files or four files, whatever, that it's pretty easy to catch those sorts of things. If you're dealing with your entire home folder, I can't tell you how many times back in the day that I would be doing a backup and thinking, wow, I really changed a lot of data. Well, I'll go get a cup of coffee, and I come back, and it's still copying, and I'm thinking, seems like, sure, I've changed some data, but this is a lot of data. And then, of course, I realize that I'm copying a new version of my home directory into backup location slash home slash clatu slash home slash clatu, you know? So, yeah, it's dangerous is all I'm really trying to say here. So now let's try it with rsync av source slash dir dash rsync slash, and that one looks like that one works as well. So I guess the moral of the story and the point that I'm trying to make is that rsync can be a little bit tricky, and it's certainly best when you script it, because otherwise you can do all sorts of horrible things to yourself. Alright, so another little thing about rsync is that, and that is, by the way, I mean, when I was using rsync on a daily basis as my backup solution, it was scripted. I never dealt with it manually. It was just not something that I bothered with. I had it in a script, and I let it do its thing automatically, and I never had to worry about whether I had the paths correct or the flags in the right place, etc. It was all scripted. So another thing about rsync that you might come to notice if you use it a lot is that it copies a file based on whether or not it exists already in the destination, and whether or not it is the same as on the destination as it is in the source. And I can kind of demonstrate this. I can do a echo 1 into source bin.list. Okay. So then if I do an ls-l of source, I see that my bin.list is 2. It's 2 bytes. So now if I do an rsync av source dir rsync, I see that it has sent 264 bytes in order to bring the bin.list into conformity to my new bin.list. Now, for a couple of things about this, right? So first of all, there's no history. So if I just accidentally destroyed a file that was very important to me, and I didn't realize I destroyed that file, and then I did an rsync, then I have two copies of that destroyed file. I do not have that file as it was yesterday or an hour ago. I have that file as it was after I destroyed it. That's a big weakness. No history to speak of. So there's that. But a different example. Let's use more than just one digit, because that's not going to really, it's not going to be big enough for us to really take note of. So we'll do a cat again of the GPL version 3 into source bin list. So we're bringing it back into, we're blowing everything else away, bringing it back to, let's find out exactly how big it is, 18,264 bytes, okay? So now if I append another copy of the GPL3 to my bin.list and then do another rsync, now it has sent 36,270 bytes. So if I append it again, now it is going to have done, I'm going to estimate 36 plus 18, so 54-ish, 54K? 54,272 bytes has been sent. So you sort of get my point, I think, at 72,000. So the more you add to a file, the more rsync has to copy. It's not, in other words, doing any kind of diffing. It is just seeing the destination file is different than the origin, and so, or the source, whatever. And so we'll copy the whole file over. And again, at the file sizes that I'm dealing with in this example, that's not really a big deal. But depending on your use case here, it might actually become a problem, because you may be doing, if you're doing this over a network with lots of clients, then you could run into actual traffic issues, and that's not really very good. Okay, so now let's do a trash with my tool, Trashy, which you can find at slackermedia.info/trashy. I'm going to do trash source / bin.list, and that's gone. So that's a dead file now. It's no longer in my source. So now if I do an rsync nothing was sent. I mean, 199 bytes were, but that's pretty standard. That's just rsync talking to itself. So if I do if I look at the rsync backup directory, dir-rsync, there's bin list still there. So I mean, that's good, right? So that's kind of one of the features that honestly kind of appealed to me in rsync, was that it may have copied new stuff over really, really sort of indiscriminately, but it didn't get rid of old stuff. And this obviously is both a good thing and a bad thing, because if it is history that you are looking for, then it is kind of nice that one file that you decided, I'll never need this again, and you deleted, is still in your backup, because rsync doesn't delete anything unless you tell it to. But on the other hand, if you're doing this for serious backup policy solution stuff, then your history just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing and never deletes anything. And that could be a problem. The solution to that is yourself. You just have to manage it a little bit different. So what you can do is a dash dash delete. So rsync dash av and then space dash dash delete and then source dir rsync, and it tells you right there, deleting bin list. And if I look at my dir rsync, sure enough, bin list is now gone. So that's kind of an advantage, is that you can manage your own rotation policy in terms of how often you run rsync with the delete flag. And if you do that once every 6 months, then you have history from, well, I shouldn't say that. You don't have history. You have an archive of everything that you have not yet deleted dating back to 6 months. once again, you have nothing in between, like, the point of, you know, the state that a file was in when you deleted it and that the actual lifespan of that file. You just have an image of that file that has not yet been deleted. Which, I mean, that might be all you need, but rsync notably lacks any kind of sense of rotating or managing its archive, and then the archive that it does keep, it's always the latest version. There's no incremental echoes of time of what your file looked like a day ago, 2 days ago, a month ago, 6 months ago. It is your file or nothing. And that's kind of where it started to fall apart for me, really, is right there, is the lack of increments. Because after a while, when you're using a lot of, when you're juggling a lot of data, something happens. Either you do something stupid or there's bit rot, something becomes corrupt, and you want to go back into history and find a better version of the file that you are now lacking. So rsync just has no ability to do that. And my first thought, because I really liked rsync, was I could homebrew something, just some shell scripts that would, you know, move the copies that I made yesterday into a directory called yesterday, or give it a timestamp, you know, whatever. And then rsync could do that. And then I thought, well, that's kind of weird, but what if I had the directory called yesterday or, you know, first backup or whatever, and then I could have rsync check to see if a file was there, and if not, then create, or if so, then maybe create, and rsync couldn't do this, but I could do this manually, you know, and like make a hard link to the thing that is in the original backup folder in whatever today's folder is, and then anything that's not there, rsync over. That could work, right? And that seemed like a brilliant idea, and honestly, I think that's probably sort of what our snapshot does now that I'm saying it out loud. But that's the problem too, is that it's a homebrew, and while I totally respect homebrews, things that you do on your own DIY, and I think obviously that's, maybe not obviously, but that is definitely one of the most powerful features of Linux. That is why I am a fan of the POSIX operating system at large. But the problem is that for your backup, like this is, I would say, of all the things that we do with computers, the one mission critical thing that we all have in common is our backup policy. Like, that's the thing that saves us from a computer crash that wipes out everything we're working on or everything that we've collected or whatever we do with our computers. So it's a big deal, the whole backup thing, which is, you know, as I say it, it's kind of funny because a lot of us don't even bother backing up. So it's simultaneously a big deal and something that none of us worry about. But it's a big deal, and if you're going to do it, then I don't know that I guess I trust myself to come up with a truly robust policy. I trust myself to come up with a truly robust policy if I sit there and test it and look at it every day. But I know that I'm not going to, and in my mind, that's the point of backups. Like, I want something that I can turn on and then not think about, and it just happens behind my back, because if I have to think about it, then it's not going to happen for backups, because it's not fun. It's not like, oh, this is so cool. I mean, the most fun I've had with backups was prepping for this episode, whereby I got to play around with a bunch of different tools and look at what they were doing and actually, you know, kind of trace everything back to how it works. That was fun for me, but just seeing if my own scripts were working the way that I want them to work, just not quite as fun. So I wanted someone else to have done the work for me, and I wanted a lot of other people in proper open source tradition to have done all the bug testing for me. And so I dropped the idea of coming up with my own policy for rsync, my own script rotation and hard link scheme, And I decided to look around for other solutions. I looked at other solutions. I'm pretty sure our snapshot at the time was one of the ones that I looked at, but the one that I settled on is the one that I'll talk about next, and that is, of course, RDiff Backup. So RDiff Backup is a really handy little tool that is written in Python and based on librsync. This is significant because I've already told you that I'm a really, really big fan of rsync, so RDiff was quite appealing to me, but it's the diff in the RDiff Backup that truly appealed. And here's what it does. So if I do, and so first of all, there's no, just like rsync, there's really no configuration file for RDiff Backup. It is a front-end command that you use to manipulate your backup data, and you can script in order to automate it. So that's nice. And by script, I mean all you'd really have to do is put it into a cron job, or, as I do, a udev rule. So RDiff Backup's command, then, is rdiff-backup, and you simply, it's just like rsync, you point it at the source, and you point it at the destination, which in my case is going to be dir-rdiff, and it does its thing. It does it quite silently unless you do a dash v and then some number. I find 4 is a pretty good level of verbosity, but you can play around with it. Now, if we open up the file, the folder, if we look at the folder, so if I do an ls dir-rdiff, which is where I saved all my stuff, then I see that I see something pretty similar to what I got with rsync, really. I've got a directory full of basically a clone of the source directory. It's got all of the latest copies of all my data in it at the root level. But there's one additional thing in there, which is the rdiff-backup-data. And the rdiff-backup-data, if I do an ls on that, I see that there's a backup log in there, there's characters to quote. I've never really looked like that. Error logs, file statistics, mirror metadata, session statistics, and increments. Increments is the only one that I've really ever dealt with, and even then, just kind of indirectly. So the way to sort of monitor what you've got in your backup, I find, is I do an rdiff-backup space dash dash list dash increment dash sizes, I think, and then I point it to dir-rdiff. And it tells me, and it does it pretty quick on this one because this is just a little tiny subset of, you know, this is just an example set of data. But it tells me that on Monday, so a few days ago from the recording time, I backed up 94 bytes, and then I backed up 115 bytes, and then 566 kilobytes, 169 kilobytes, 103 bytes. And on Wednesday, I did a 10.2 megabyte backup, which is the current, that's the cumulative size, it's the current mirror of my data. The actual size of the source directory is 11 megabytes. So that's a couple of days of data that has been archived for my historical use, and really it's not as large as the source directory that it is backing up. Again, tiny little set of data, so it's not, you know, I wouldn't take this information to the bank, as they say. But if I do a rdiff-backup-list-increment-sizes onto my thumb drive backup directory, which is what I've been using for a very long time, then I've got, it's actually still processing, so I'll have to stall. Well, I didn't stall, I just pressed pause, but I'm back now, and yeah, so I've got this listing of all the data on this thumb drive, and it's actually kind of surprising to me. It's not actually nearly as large as I kind of thought it was, and in fact, it's gotten smaller. So the total size is 24.9 gigabytes, which off of a 64 gig thumb drive is really, I'm not exactly I'm not pushing any limits. I really kind of imagined I was using more. I never really bothered checking. I just assumed. And you'd think I would notice because I plug it in and KDE tells me every single, on every Dolphin window, it shows me the amount of space that I have left because I have that little space remaining widget turned on in Dolphin. But anyway, so yeah, it's 24.9 gigabytes down from, for instance, on this screen, as recently as October 24, it was 25.8 gigabytes. So it's actually gone down about a gig since about a month ago. But it shows me, again, like the size of each incremental backup. And that's kind of interesting to note, you know, like on November 2nd, for instance, I had an incremental backup of 3.48 megabytes. And then on Friday, 4.93 megabytes. And then, let's see, here's a sort of November 14, so that's like 10 days ago, let's say, 22 megabytes. So, yeah, the backup sizes, the snapshots themselves, or the increments, are not that large. And the recovery of these increments is really not that hard. So I could do, for instance, an rdiff-backup, and then I could say --restore--as--of, could do now, which would be the most recent copy of some file. But I can also do some arbitrary time limit, some amount of time. So for instance, I'll switch away from my thumb drive as an example, because that's not what we're using. So I just kind of wanted to emphasize that the backup size did not end up being tremendous. And granted, this is a specific use case. This is, I have my own workflow, and I manage my data in a specific way, so I'm not guaranteeing that your backup will always be as reasonably proportionate as mine is, but I am saying that I think rdiff backup does a really good job of keeping the backup size fairly minimal. So what we'll do is we'll do, because we're restoring a file now, right? So I'm just out here in my, let's say I'm in my home directory. I'm not, but let's say I am. So I'm just out here in my home directory. So I can just go to rdiff-backup --restore--as--of, and then I could say, I'm going to go back to my increment size thing, because that way I might list the increment sizes. Because that way I kind of have a, I use that one as kind of a map for how long, how far back I can go. So in this case, I've got, it's a Thursday or a Wednesday or something right now. So I could go back to Monday. So that'd be roughly a day ago. So I'll just say 1D. That's 1 and then a capital D for day. So as of 1 day ago, I want to restore, and then I just use the path to the file that I want to restore. So I could say dir-rdiff/textfile.txt, and then I need to tell it where I want to restore it to. So I could just restore it here, or I could restore it to some directory, but I'm just going to restore it here, and I'm just going to call it textfile-recover.txt, just so that I can audit it before I commit it to my file system. And yeah, there it is. It's got all the text. It's everything's there that I expected to be there. So that would be the recovery process. So now let's do something crazy, and we're going to remove. Actually, we're going to trash. I say remove, and I always, practically always, mean trash with trashy. So I'm going to trash dirt. Nope, not dirt. I'm going to trash source. And then I'm going to get rid of this, let's get rid of this generic text file, .txt. So I've just removed this big long text file that I had in there as a sample set of data. It's just the GPL3. So I've just removed it from source. But now let's say that I want to restore that. Well, let's not restore it yet. I'm going to do a rdiff backup of, and I'll do it verbosely again, of source into rdiff. So in other words, I'm backing up a version of my data that no longer has a file in there. Yeah, I've deleted a file. So now if I look at my dir-rdiff directory now that I've backed it up, the text file is gone. It is no longer there because the root level of my backup directory is always the most recent snapshot of whatever I have backed up. And that can be scary because you think, well, now how do I know what files I had? How do I know what to back up if I have no idea of what I'm missing? You know what I mean? So, I mean, unless you're doing a full restore, then who cares, right? You just give me the last known backup and dump it into this location. But if it's a file that, yeah, maybe you accidentally deleted a week ago and now you're noticing it's gone, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Remember the exact file name off the top of your head? Of course not. So here's the cool thing about rdiff backup, or one of the many cool things. So now if I do an rdiff-backup space dash dash list dash at dash time, so list at time, let's do one day ago, because that's, for this sample set, that's ages ago. One delta, one big D, space dir rdiff, so that's my backup directory. I don't need to go any further than that. I can just tell it that's the backup directory, and then hit return. It lists what was in that directory for me as of one day ago. And sure enough, I've got copying, I've got dungeon delvers, .epub, I've got generic text file, I've got 1.txt, which I honestly don't even remember doing, and then wallpaper underscore 1280 by 760 wallpaper.jpg. And that's everything that was in there one day ago. Now, if I do, for instance, now, list at time now, dir rdiff, then it shows me what's in there right now. And that's a different set. It's copying bin.list, dungeondelvers.epub, and then wallpaper. So that's good. That's great. So we know now how to get a list of everything that was there. So now we also know how to restore as of dash dash restore dash as dash of 1D again, one day ago. And then I'll tell it to restore dir dash rdiff slash generic text file dot txt. And then I'm going to just call this generic dash restore dot txt to my current directory. And now if I do a list of my current directory, yep, there's the generic dash restore dot txt. So it's very much like, I don't know, a copy or an rsync command. I guess really more like a copy. The only thing is that the file that you're copying may or may not actually be there, but rdiff will use your time reference to look back in history, back in time, to see what was there, and then it will copy that data and dump it wherever you want. You can restore it to any place that you want. So it's really, really slick. It's really nice. It is effective. It is easy to use. It's easy to kind of, not troubleshoot, but easy to probe, I guess. You know, you can query it in several different ways. And if you look at man rdiff-backup, you'll see that there's just an enormous amount of really useful functionality here. There are ways to compare data sets. There are ways to query your data set, to look at statistics about your data set. Of course, there's ways to include and exclude files, ways to restore files, just all kinds of stuff. It really, really is enormously helpful. So rdiff backup, A's all around, honestly. Everything about it is perfect. I can't imagine what I would change with rdiff backup. It is an absolutely, to my mind, perfect backup solution. It has served me well, so I'm speaking particularly highly of it because it has served me very, very well. It has rescued data for me. It has kept track of data for me. I have no complaints about it. Now, one thing about it that I don't really have a whole lot of experience with is the multi-user aspect of it. And it's a good aspect of it. It has a lot of allowances for making sure that all the file permissions stay true to the things, you know, to the owner of it, so that if you're using it on a multi-system, you can do that and preserve permissions and extended attributes if you have a couple of different Python modules installed to handle that sort of thing. It'll handle all that stuff, but that's not what I use it for. When I use it, it's either just for me, or it's for me and my partner, and frankly, the stuff that we're backing up mutually, the file permissions don't really matter that much to either of us. I mean, we have our distinct users, but if I drop it down to root and chone it to her versus to me, it would be as simple as that. So it's not a big deal about the file permissions. Whereas obviously, if I was using this at an organization where that actually did matter really a lot, then I would probably investigate more about the file permissions and attribute aspect of RDIF backup. This episode is a lot longer than I had anticipated. Let's take a coffee break. Brings us to the underdog, our snapshot, the guy who didn't get a chance. Actually, got a chance. I've spent about, all told, to be honest, about a week with our snapshot, which, again, compared to years with rsync, years with rdiff, not really fair. But I gave it the once over. So, and actually, looking at one, the more I got to know it, the more I realized that I have actually used our snapshot as a user. And I didn't realize it, but from the user end, I actually have used it. Either that, or I've used something amazingly like our snapshot that someone put together themselves. But I imagine, why wouldn't someone just use our snapshot? So our snapshot, I'm going to venture to say that it is designed for the enterprise environment, because that's just kind of what it feels like. Everything about it just sort of seems like they had a different use case in mind than the single person, you know, just backing up their thumb drive and their hard drive and stuff like that. And the reason I say this is because it's very much designed like an enterprise application, meaning that when you download it and install it, you immediately have to go through, I mean, in order to use it, you've got to do a configuration file, an rsnapshot config.conf. And it's not a terribly small configuration file. I mean, I've seen worse, but it's kind of a hefty one. So if you've ever used something like Backup My PC, or I think that's what it's called, what's it called, Amanda, you know, those kinds of backup solutions, this is vaguely within that ballpark. So you have to set things like, and even what's the other one that I used to use? I used another one that I specifically decided not to. Oh, it was called Lucky Backup. Although I'm looking at the website right now, and that doesn't look like it. Anyway, there are those backup systems that you kind of have to configure initially, which I didn't really think was so strange until I started using RDIF Backup, which has no configuration file, and I just thought, wow, this is really cool. This is pretty sensible. So the fact that a configuration file exists isn't horrible. It's just, I don't know, in my mind, it kind of puts it into a different place, because there's rsync, there's RDIF, no configuration files there, and then there's these other things that require configuration files. And I'm talking about configuration files to define things like, where's your copy command? Where's your rsync command? Where's your rm command? Things like that. So the way that our snapshot works is, and it's, believe me, it's a complex one. And again, this is kind of why I'm thinking, yeah, this is kind of probably for people who have to deal with serious levels of backup. And there's the ability to use LVM to create snapshots and that sort of thing. And then there's just the standard sort of backup process, which is defined by different backup levels. So there's alpha, there's beta, there's gamma, there's delta, and I guess you could go further. I'm not really sure It indicates that you can, because in the configuration file it ends with gamma, but then it says etc. So I guess you could go further. But the idea here is that alpha and beta and all those these levels are based on the frequency of backing up. So alpha is the most frequent level of backup. That's the one that you're running frequently. For instance, maybe every 4 hours or 2 hours or whatever. And then beta is the one that you would run less frequently. You in your cron job, you might have that set to do every day. And then the gamma, you might have it do that every week. And then the delta, you might have that do every month. And then the alphas, or anything lower, you know, or anything more frequent than the current running backup, gets rotated out. So for instance, if a beta kicks in, then it's going to take all the previous alpha backups and delete the oldest alpha, ripple everything down, and so then you've got a fresh daily backup with a couple of straggling hourly backups, which of course get replaced as get rotated out as new alphas are taken, and so on. The command to run our snapshot is a little bit unique. So we're assuming, for instance, that we've settled on a configuration file. In the configuration file, at the very least, you need to set the snapshot underscore root location. And in my case, I've made that backup dash comp, which is my comparison folder, in there, dir dash r snap. I also had to tell it, or I had to set the location of the lock file, because it wanted to send that to var something or another, and I didn't have access there as a standard user, and I didn't want to actually drop down to root just to do this test. Had to change the log file location as well, for the same reasons. Didn't want to have to drop down to root just to test this stuff out. So that's the configuration file. Not really that bad, but it is something that you kind of have to do in order to use rsnap. There's not really a way around it that I could find. So then to run the command itself on a daily basis, I had to use the dash C for the configuration option to point it to a different config, because it wanted to look in /etc/rsnapshot.conf, and I didn't want it to look there. So I did rsnapshot-v for verbose-c for config, rsnapshot.conf, which I just current directory. And then the key, the level of backup that you want to do. Now you can, if you try to do a beta prematurely, it will not let you. So for instance, I just tried to do beta and it echoed the PID into the PID thing, and then it told me that nothing was going to copy because alpha.5 was not present yet. So it won't let me do a beta yet because I don't have enough alphas. So if I do rsnapshot-v-c rsnapshot.conf alpha, then it makes a new level of backups for me. So that's the process of backing up. It's really intended, I would argue, that it's meant to be a cron job sequence of alpha, beta, delta, gamma, and it's just supposed to go on its own. Which, if you're on a big network, for instance, or if you're at your workstation that's on all the time, that makes a lot of sense, you know, just kind of back up every hour, or every 4 hours, or whatever it is, and then make sure that you get a backup in at the end of the day, and so on. It makes sense. It's a fairly, I guess, predictable kind of setup. So once you've made your backup and you've done that a couple of times, then it's a little bit, the probing of what you have is a little bit awkward for me, but I'm gonna address that in a moment as well. So the structure here in this particular backup directory that I've got, dir-rsnap, is the typical structure, and that's that you've got your root level, and then in your root level you've got your alphas and your beta level backups. So if you do an ls-R of dir dash r snapshot dash r snap your backup directory slash, for instance, alpha dot star. And then I'm going to pipe that to less because I happen to know it's a pretty big list. You've got all your directories, subdirectories, and it's kind of a weird set of directories, but again, you can kind of see where they're coming from. So for instance, everything within alpha 0 is nested within something called localhost, which for my purpose, I don't really need it to be nested in localhost, but that's kind of the model that it assumes, and that's fine. So inside of localhost, I've got slash home slash clat2 slash backup dash comp, and then in there I've got my dash slash source directory, which of course is the one that I actually set as my as the directory to backup, and that's in the conf file as well. I probably forgot to mention that, but yeah, that's an important one to set. The conf is what you actually want to backup, and obviously it defaults I think to slash home, possibly even more than that, but I restricted it to just backing up the source. So in the in alpha 0, for instance, I've got copying, I've got bin.list, I've got dungeondelvers.epub, I've got wallpaper.jpg. Cool. If I go back a little bit, alpha.1, I've got the same set of files, sort of. I've got the copying, I've got the epub. Ah, but now I've got the generic text file, which you'll recall I deleted. And I've got this other old text file called 1.txt, which I do not remember doing, but clearly I did earlier this week, and wallpaper.jpg. And if I go further back, yeah, you just kind of, you know, you can scroll through your alpha level backups and you see stuff. Now, all of that presumably gets pretty much just collapsed down into a beta with anything new in the beta. For your daily snapshot or your daily backup thing. So that's the structure. It's a mirror. It's a snapshot, really, is what it is. It's a snapshot of your file system at the time of your backup process. And the further back you go, you know, the files change. So you can step back in time, clearly, which you could not do with rsync, which you can do with rdiff, and you can kind of see the changing structure of your file system, and that's pretty good. Now, the best way that I could find to do a restore, there's not a built-in restore command for rsnapshot at all. It's just not something that they built into this tool. The rsnapshot command itself is the thing that you're going to, I think their assumption is that you're going to put into your cron job. That's the thing that's going to happen automatically. People aren't using the rsnap command. It's very much a sysadmin-y type of command. So you're not meant to really invoke rsnapshot, from what I gather, all that frequently. And their website, to the question, how do I restore, they provide the answer of just go grab the file. That's it. That's the answer. So presumably, if I had a file in my backup that I decided that I really that I need, then I would want to do a find on that directory. And then I could see where that file exists. So, for instance, if I do a find in dir-rsnap-iname, so case insensitively, quote star generic text file star quote, so I'm just kind of doing a fuzzy search for generic text file, and then a dash type f, so I'm looking for a file. Then I get a return of this generic text file.txt in four different places, alpha.1, alpha.2, alpha.3, alpha.4. So I know that if I've got my cron job set up to do backups every 4 hours, then I can kind of think, okay, well, I know that it was good in the morning when I got here, so I'll just restore it from the farthest one back, which is alpha.4 in this case. And then I'll grab that and hopefully have a better version of the file than the, you know, the one that I accidentally screwed up an hour ago, or 3 hours ago, or whatever. And that ought to work, really, if you think about it. Now, the thing I don't love about that is that there's not really a great indication of the exact time and date that the snapshot was taken. And I say that knowing full well that I never actually look at that information in our diff backup. So in a weird way, I'm complaining about something that I never use. And I think it's just the fact that it's kind of abstracted from time, and that it is placed directly into the iteration of the backup itself. And that's a little bit difficult for me to follow. Now, luckily, the time that I used our snapshot, and I'm assuming it was our snapshot, and if not, I think you could probably do something similar with our snapshot anyway, but the time that I used it, what they did was they put the snapshots or the backups on an NFS share, and everyone had access to their own backup directory, and you could go into your backup directory, and rather than seeing alpha and beta and gamma and delta snapshots, you saw top-level directories that were labeled hourly, daily, weekly, monthly. So in that way, you could, you know, for your kind of processing, like, well, I know that it was good this morning, so, well, why don't I just grab the one from yesterday? Or, you know, like, just last night. I know that they take backups at 2 a.m., so I remember it was good when I left yesterday, it was good this morning, I corrupted it sometime after that, so I'll just grab the one from the daily folder, and I know that I'll have a pretty fresh copy. And then if you're not really sure, maybe you want to see if you can save a little bit more work, you could also look at the copy in the daily directory, no, not the daily, the hourly directory, and who knows, maybe you'll get lucky, and that backup had just run, you know, 5 minutes ago before you screwed it up or whatever. So there was a little bit of de-abstraction there going on, and that seems useful for people who maybe aren't familiar with exactly when the snapshots are actually being taken. Because obviously as a sysadmin who did the conf file and knows it like the back of your, and did the cron job file, so you know, like, when the backups are going to run, and you probably rattle it off. You know, it's, obviously, they run at 10 o'clock, and then at 2 o'clock, and then at 6 o'clock, and then again at 10 o'clock, and then again at 2 a.m. Why would we do it any differently? But, I mean, if you're just a worker, you don't know when these things are happening. You don't care. You don't have to think about that sort of thing. You can't retain that. The time that you care, as with any backup solution, is when you actually need to rescue your data. That's the crazy thing about backup everything, you know? It's just like nobody cares about anything about backing up until they need the data. And that's why I do prefer things that, or I do find it comforting when things default to front-loading how you restore your data. I love to read in a backup thing, in a backup manual page, or a website, how you back the thing up. I just feel like if you go to a backup site, a site that's advertising, hey, we've got software, it backs your stuff up, the first thing out of the gate you should be reading is, here's how easy it is to restore. Because you're only going there when you need to restore a file. That's the only reason you care about their stupid website or their man page. And you only really care when you're shopping around for backups is, can I restore my data in the end? Like, everything up to the end point of, yep, here's a copy of your data, you don't care about. You don't care how it happens, how often it happens, why it happens, what triggers it. All you care about is the restore process. And so far, they've all been fairly equal in restoring. So our snapshot, whilst I could, I should be able to give it an A all around, but I mean, honestly, from my biased point of view, I'm going to give it a B, just because it's not the one that I'm going to use, and it's cool, and it seems like it would be quite robust, and it's probably something that I will look at again for a different set of requirements. But RDiff snapshot just gives me that raw rsync satisfaction, along with the convenience of historical backup archives. That said, our snapshot is clearly a really, really finely tuned project with lots of different options, and I would say that all three of them, rsync, rsnapshot, and rdiff backup, they have a great restore process. I can't complain about them. I mean, rsync, I guess, I was going to say it was the worst because you don't have the history, but I mean, that's not the restore process. The restore process is how do I get my data when I'm panicking? And so with rsync, you just go into the folder and you grab it. And that's what you do with rsnapshot. And potentially it's what you'll do with rdiff unless you've deleted the file and then backed it up. And then you just have to kind of probe it a little bit to find where that old deleted file is, and then you grab it. And that's the same with rsnapshot too. I mean, if you've deleted your file, then it's not going to be in your most recent backup image. It'll be gone from there, and you'll have to do some kind of probe, whether it's a find or just an ls-R, or just looking in the backup previous. You know, if you know that you just deleted it and you feel pretty confident that it was there 4 hours ago or whatever, then you can just increment it yourself. Point is, the file's not going to just be in your backup directory directly. It's going to be sort of hidden in the archives. So that's pretty, I think, common. I think that's an understood part of the process. So yeah, I'm really, really quite pleased with all of these solutions, to be honest. They all seem, and it's funny because they're all based on rsync. I mean, rsnapshot uses rsync, rdiff-backup uses librsync, and rsync is rsync. So it's kind of funny that while I think a lot of Unix geeks are drawn strongly to rsync, I think in the end we stick with rsync a lot of times, whether we even think about it or not. And to be fair, rsnapshot apparently can use LVM to do snapshotting and stuff like that, so some people may have broken free of the rsync addiction when they're using rsnap. But still, you have to admit, all three tools, rsync is either the foundation for it or the inspiration for it, so that's kind of interesting. So which one should you use? Well, rsync, I don't know. I mean, you can use it, and some people do, and like I say, I did for many years. I find that for the amount of work that you have to do to get rdiff backup up and running is so minimal that you may as well just use it instead of rsync. And I know that you might think that that's kind of heresy because you love rsync. I know you do. I love rsync too, but you can use rdiff the same way that you use rsync, plus you gain the benefit of history, of your historical, you know, archive of data. And that's huge. It really is. You don't think it's huge, but it is. It's a big deal because you want that. You want the iterations of your file. Maybe you don't, but I find it's useful to have, or at least it's comforting to have, if nothing else. And I think that it only sort of takes maybe once or twice. I want to say once, but let's be real, we're all pretty tolerant. It only takes a couple of times of screwing up a file and then backing that file up with rsync and then restoring it from your rsync backup, only to find that, yes, you've backed up the bad version of your file. And then you start thinking, oh, you know what? That rdiff backup thing where I would have had that file as it had appeared 2 days ago, that would be really useful right now. So it doesn't take that long for you to understand the benefit. And really, if that's the only benefit, then that's worth it. Because I'm telling you, rdiff backup takes zero effort. You install it, and you run it as you would rsync, except with fewer options. It's just rdiff-backup maybe a verbose flag if you want, and then destination and source. That's it. And yes, it works over different protocols. It doesn't have to be a local backup the way I do. Like I say, I'm using it for a thumb drive that backs up to the computer. But you can use it over a network as well. It will work just fine over a network. And then last but certainly not least, our snapshot. A little bit more complex to set up because you actually do have to deal with a configuration file. And the way that they want you to use it, they want you to kind of cron job it and make sure that it's running on a regular basis, which, to be fair, you'd have to do with rsync or rdiff anyway. I mean, unless you've got it scripted like I do as a udev action, but still, that's some setup. So I don't really see myself using rsnapshot anytime soon. I could see myself using it, though, and I would be interested in doing some comparisons in transit time and kind of workload between rdiff and between rsnapshot, simply because rdiff, it has processing to do. There's some cost of the diffing process. I don't know how much or what kind of difference it is making, but it would be kind of interesting to see if rsnapshot is remarkably faster, because, I mean, if it encounters a file that has not changed, it skips right over it, and it just makes it a hard link. Maybe that and then if it encounters a new file, I gather it's simply copying the entire file over. So, I mean, maybe it would be on par with rsync itself in terms of network traffic and CPU cycles as it tries to figure out whether or not something needs to be copied. It would be interesting to see how it compares to rdiff and whether rdiff is faster or slower. Does it take extra time when it's attempting to diff a file that maybe is quite large, and maybe it would be less expensive to just copy the entire thing over? I'm not sure. I don't know, and that kind of testing realistically isn't something that I'm going to sit down and do anytime soon. And I think possibly the way that I would test that in real life is just implement rsnapshot in one, you know, for doing one set of backups and then implement rdiff doing another set of the same thing just at different times, and just kind of getting a feel for, yeah, like, have they been cut off? Has the process been complete? How is it going? So it's been a good little comparison, though. It's been a lot of fun. And I urge you to, if you're using rsync, I urge you to try something a little bit more advanced, whether it's rdiff or rsnapshot, whatever works for your workflow. But they're really good tools. You should check them out and see what you think. That's it. Thanks for listening. Oh yeah, how can you find me or contact me? Well, my name is Klaatu. I'm not Klaatu on IRC on the Freenode network. I'm usually in the channel Ogcast Planet or Slacker Media and a handful of others. I am Klaatu on the Mastodon network. You can find me at mastodon.xyz/@notklaatu. Or if you prefer email, that's certainly an option. That's klaatu@member.fsf.org. That is member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. Or klaatu@hackerpublicradio.org. Either one of those works, they go to the same place. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you next time.
here was a Mr. Bungle, and no one wanted to be.